This podcast is brought to you by the new site, EdenPureHowie.com. Save $20 on any of their products, plus get free shipping. Go to EdenPureHowie.com and put in code word MYDEALS. Enjoy the podcast.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up, named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
You can tell from my voice, I am not Grace Curley. This is Toby Leary, and I'm filling in for Grace, who is enjoying her wedded bliss, her honeymoon. I wish them a wonderful married life together as they go forth. And so I'm really happy to be here. For the next 3 hours, we'll talk all things guns, Second Amendment, freedom, self-defense, and the raging news stories of the day. So I look forward to a busy show today. We'll take your calls. If you want to text in too, we'll get to those. The number here is 844-500-4242. If you want to be on the line with me and talk guns and politics and whatever else you want, but a lot of gun talk these days. So 844-500-4242 if you want to jump on. And a couple things to bring you guys up to date of what's been going on in our world. We just finished up the first ever gun makers match and education day at Cape Gunworks down on the Cape this past weekend. It was a great event. We had Rob Pincus out from ICE Training, who is a hobbyist gun maker and 3D printer, kind of, you know, home firearm builder. And he kind of brought the whole thing together. He's been doing these matches, and I think we're the second regional match. There's been a national match and also a couple other small local events in Colorado. And this has been starting to, you know, gain traction. And it's pretty funny because some of the groups that came out to support this event, one was Are We Cool Yet? And they are a industry that posts a lot of, you know, the free files, if you will, the CAD files online. And they have kind of a support group that helps each other, you know, figure stuff out. And it's a hobby. It's kind of a nerdy type of hobby thing that they claim these matches have brought them out of the basement and into the light. And so it's kind of normalizing gun building. And it's been happening for thousands of years, weapons building, if you will, whether you were a swordsmith in the Middle Ages or you were a Japanese, you know, samurai sword maker, or whether you made flintlock rifles or percussion rifles prior to the Revolutionary War, or, you know, there's been people building arms in their homes for, you know, since the dawn of time. Even go back to the cavemen with rocks and arrowheads and arrows and whatnot. So it's been going on forever. And now this late push as of the last few years against ghost guns, guns that we can't let people have, even though they're not a prohibited person, because the government doesn't know about it. So if the government doesn't know about it, it makes them nervous. Like, oh man, I need to know about that gun. So, you know, all of a sudden, we're trying to paint people who make their own firearms or home-built firearms as some, you know, criminal enterprise out there, that they are arming the local biker gang or the local drug, you know, gang, or the local Crips and Bloods. You know, they're trying to keep them well-armed to perpetuate the street violence. Like, that's what everybody, and nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, I'm sure that happens in a small percentage, but you know, you can take anything and use it for evil. That doesn't mean that the people who aren't committing evil shouldn't be allowed to have it. So, you know, that's the standard, right? If cars can be used for evil, as we saw in this rampage last night in Waukesha, Wisconsin, that doesn't mean we should now ban cars from everybody and make it hard for everybody to go buy cars and do an extra layer of background check and make a 30-day waiting period to buy the car. That isn't the way this works. So all of a sudden, we want to do the same thing for guns, though. We want to make this giant leap of faith and logic and say the gun is the problem. And because you have access to the gun and you made it in your basement and we don't know about it and you didn't have to do a background check, even though you already have 30 guns that you bought at the gun store that are legal for you to own and possess, and you're not a prohibited person. But that one gun that we don't know about, and most states don't have any type of gun registration anyway. So Massachusetts is one that does have registration. So we had this gun makers match over the weekend. Saturday, a bunch of people came together. And what was really interesting is some of the big names in Massachusetts gun, you know, issues or gun related events, like myself, I at Cape Gunworks, I've been the owner of Cape Gunworks, sold a lot of these Polymer 80 kits and whatnot over the years. And it occurred to me like last week that I had never built a gun for myself, like from a Polymer 80 kit or a P80 kit or a 3D printed kit. Now, I've manufactured other guns. We are a manufacturer and I've done them, you know, built AR-15s for even police and police officers and for departments. I've made machine guns. I've made all kinds of guns, but I've never made like my own personal firearm for myself that I'm gonna, you know, out of like a kit that is commercially available. So a bunch of us got together on Saturday for the education day, and we had guys like Matt from 2A3D Print and the Aussie guys, Ari Couliette, that came up from Florida. Matt came from Rhode Island. Rob came from Colorado and kind of guided us through the process. We did it, and we did it with some very primitive tools. So any toolbox in the basement or the shed will do. You know, you need some basic files, a Dremel, a drill, and whatnot, and you can kind of manufacture your own gun. And so we did that on Saturday, and then we competed with those home-built guns on Sunday. It was a great time. We had a blast doing it, and good camaraderie, a lot of fun, and it kind of shines the light into the dark corner and normalizes this practice or this hobbyist type of gun building. And in Massachusetts, we have some extra hoops we have to jump through. So now that we made these guns, we have 7 days to register them. But on the other hand, other states, you don't have that same requirement. And you see the news media has really picked up this ball and ran with it and, you know, has claimed these ghost guns have to go. Like, there's no way we can let people have these ghost guns because we need to know about them. Yeah, they're scary. Just saying ghost guns sounds scary. Need to get Scooby-Doo on the scene to figure it all out. So, you know, the issue is when you got people who aren't prohibited and like guns building their own gun, there's no nefarious activity happening. And it's really like, in some cases, a form of art. Like, you see the stuff that the Aussie guys do and the 3D printed guns. They make these guns that are unbelievably creative, like Star Wars blasters and really, really neat, interesting different colors and color schemes and patterns and all that. And so, I mean, my mind was blown. We had one guy compete. This guy, Tom, came and he did he built a frame for a pistol that he found, like he builds, and he's in construction industry, and he comes out with this huge piece of steel, like high carbon steel, and he mills out the frame for a SIG 320 out of this thick piece of high carbon steel and blued it and stippled it and put a beaver tail on it and did a beautiful job, and the gun ran very well. He had a hiccup on the first stage of the match and then tweaked it in between, and then it ran flawlessly for the remainder of the match. And he also brought out a bunch of other stuff that he had built over the years, and it was a very cool, very great time to see the Yankee ingenuity from people. Like, you know, you're never going to be able to hide that. You're never going to be able to push that down. People are always going to want to create. That's the way freedom is. Freedom creates. It puts people at liberty to do great things and do big things and create artwork in whatever form they choose, whatever their canvas is. And in this weekend, we chose to make guns, and it was fun and a great event. And we had a good time. John Green was there from Gun Owners Action League, and he kind of gave everybody the education on the legality of it, and it was just a good time was had by all. Jared Yanis showed up from Guns and Gadgets, and he built his first gun as well. So what was ironic is I hadn't built one of these kits, Jared hadn't built one of these kits, and John hadn't built one of these kits. Three guys who are kind of in the industry and out there in front a lot of the time, you know, from Massachusetts. And it was just kind of cool. And a couple of us, as we're building these guns, go, this is going to get expensive because you're not going to be able to do it. It's like a Lay's potato chip. You can't just eat one, right? You're not going to have just one. So lot of fun with that. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to being a part of that voice that normalizes the 3D printed community. Or I think in a couple of years, a lot of banter was being kicked around that I remember like 5 years ago, like if you knew someone who had a job working with a 3D printer, you were cool. And nowadays, like you can get them on Amazon for a couple $100. And they say in 4 or 5 years, maybe even 2 or 3, they think every home will have one. It'll be just kind of normal. Like, oh, you broke the handle on your scissors. Okay, go print one out and put it on there. It's going to be the way it is. It's going to be a very normalized thing. And so, you know, the open source community out there has lots of files online and whatnot. And so, you know, I was happy to be a part of this and shine the good light on this subject and take that stigma away from ghost guns and say, you know, and stop even using the narrative. It's a home-built firearm. It's not a ghost gun. It's a home-built firearm. And that really is the, you know, co-opted term that the media loves to beat people over the head with, to scare people over and make it sound like your neighbor is, you know, arming the Irish Republican Army out of his basement or his garage, and nothing can be further from the truth. It takes some local gangsters to do that. But so anyway, we'll talk more about that on the other side, and we got lots to cover. So stick around for the Grace Curley Show. I'm your host today, Toby Leary. We will be right back.
She's never held office, but she paid the whiskey priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. I'm your guest host today, Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. And today's poll question is brought to you by Fairway Financial. Preparation and planning is the key to your retirement future. Visit fairwayfinancial.net. And Jared, what is today's poll question and what are the results thus far?
After the Waukesha traffic attack, what will Biden go after first? Ghost guns, AR-15s, or the police?
Very good question. I'm going to say AR-15s.
AR-15s is polling at 24% in the lead, the police at 71%. And 6% for those oh-so-spooky ghost guns.
All right. Well, you know, it's funny because that's the narrative they're going to draw from this attack. Like, if Kyle hadn't had an AR-15, none of this would have happened. If Woody had gone straight to the police, none of this would have happened. But, all right, John's been on hold for quite a while, so let's go to the phones. John, you're next on the Grace Curley Show with Toby Leary. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
I have a question. If I get gifted a gun that I'm not sure if it's registered or not, and if it was, it was before 1980. Mm-hmm. Do I then have to register it?
It's a Massachusetts transaction portal. You can register the gun there if you've obtained it, you know, and you don't know the history of it, if you will. So there's like for people who move here to the state or whatever, I'm sure anytime there's a transfer that takes place, the state requires that you register it. So since a transfer took place, I would jump on the EFA-10 portal and I would register it, and then it's good to go. So, yep.
Okay. I was under the impression if it was never registered because it's so old that you don't have to register it.
If it's a modern firearm, I think it has to be registered anytime a transfer takes place. But if it was like made prior to 1898, then yeah, you're right. But if it's 1980, it still needs to be registered, unfortunately. But that's the state we live in. So yeah, you're reporting of a transaction that took place. And so I think it would be option 2 if you go to the EFA-10 gun transaction portal, and you can just put, you know, the registration info, put the gun info, put your info in, and hit submit, print it out, and you'd be good to go.
Gotcha. Yep. Also, quick thing. Yep. My fear with the Rittenhouse verdict is, yeah, he's definitely innocent. It was self-defense, but everything went perfect for him. I mean, it was just, it fell out perfectly. The video was there. I'm afraid it's going to give people a sense of false confidence about using a gun in self-defense. Because, I mean, I've had guns my whole life. I've been shooting a long time, and it went perfect. I couldn't have done better myself. Nobody could.
Well,
and
honestly,
that there were cameras there.
Yeah,
it worked out great for them.
Well, honestly, we teach in our classes. Thanks for the call, John. I appreciate that, and I'll talk about that a little bit because I hear what you're saying. But I think if it worked out perfect, like he would have said, "Hey, I'm here to help. I'm a medic," and everyone would have been like, "All right, cool, bro. Here's the dude who needs stitches or a Band-Aid or something," and everyone would have gone home. Even frankly, the world's probably a better place since one of those guys is gone. You know, the pedophile who was out on bail for one day. But even still, the perfect unfolding of that would have been that no one got shot. You know, I'll just say it. And I'm probably on the, the minority side of that when it comes to the gun issue. And I hear what you're saying, that I hope it doesn't embolden people to say, oh, cool, we can go out in the community and just, you know, with our guns and open carry and no training and no de-escalation techniques and no real reason to even be there other than some people asked me to go do the cool thing that night. And I personally think that, you know, if there's a connection there and a business that needs defending because it's someone's livelihood on the line and he asks a few friends to come defend it, like, I got no issue with that. And that's unfortunately where we're headed in some cases when you tell the police to stand down and they're not helping destroy businesses. But he really didn't have a connection to the guy who owned the car dealership other than a friend invited him to be there that night to do, you know, to keep an eye on things. But he did feel a connection to the town of Kenosha. I mean, his dad lived there. I believe his sister lived there. He had a job there. And so he felt like he was helping his community by scrubbing graffiti off the walls and going there with his medical bag and whatever. But the severe lack of training was also on full display. And I'm not saying that it should be mandatory in order to get a gun or to carry a gun, but I do believe that the industry as a whole has a much better, can do a better job of pointing those things out and saying, hey, look, if you're going to carry a gun in the open space out there and beyond the four walls of your home, take a class, take some training, learn some de-escalation techniques, learn some proper weapon handling techniques. And I agree with you that the verdict was correct 100%, that, you know, it was obviously self-defense. The guy was in a situation where, you know, he could have been killed or had great bodily injury or harm. And that's 100% true. And that was on full display. But, you know, you're never going to win the argument of for the other side of the fact, you know, that he shouldn't have been there in the first place. There's going to be that side of things. And now, do I think he shouldn't have been there? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. I'm not really coming down hard either way on that, because I do believe there are people who think they're the sheepdog and want to help the people who can't help themselves. Personally, I do believe that, you know, minding your own business does go a long way. And I think that's really the way it should go in my world anyway. But you drop that trigger, you've changed your life forever. So that's where he's at right now. And we'll talk about that on the other side. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. I'm your guest host, Toby Leary, and you can join me on my own show every Saturday if you want, or weekend, if you go to capegunworks.com and click on Rapid Fire. I'm the host of a weekly radio show that talks all things guns, Second Amendment, freedom, and self-defense, and would love to hear from you, so join us. And we're glad to be filling in today for Grace. It's awesome every time I get the opportunity to do this and shine the light into the dark corners of evil guns, the way the people would, you know, the media would have you believe that. For those that don't know, there's a slight minority of people in America that own guns, but there's still probably 400 million guns in America. So they're not going anywhere anytime soon, thank God. And they are the great equalizer. They're also a fun hobby and a collectible thing and a way of life for some people, not to mention, in some cases, a form of personal protection to, you know, make sure that they go home to their family every night. So anyway, we'll get more on that. We've been talking about the Rittenhouse trial a little bit, and I opined about that a little bit. And now we have Mike on the phone who wants to talk about that. So Mike, thanks for the call. You're next on the Grace Curley Show. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show. Quick question. You made a comment on the fact that maybe the left could argue the fact that maybe, even though it was a justified shooting, maybe he shouldn't have been there to begin with. But if they're going to use that argument, how about, you know, with the sanctuary cities and the illegal aliens that commit crimes, maybe they shouldn't have been there either.
Oh, I totally agree. And I also believe that the rioters shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been burning down the city. They shouldn't have been, you know, lighting dumpster fires and blowing, you know, burning down trucks. I also believe that Gage Grosskreutz, or whatever his name is, I still can't pronounce his name, who was a felon in possession of a handgun, who happened to travel a lot further than Kyle Rittenhouse did to be there that night, I think he shouldn't have been there. You know, so the problem is, when you want to defund the police, you want to basically protect violence in your community, this is the natural outflow of what happens, unfortunately. And I don't think any of us are happy about that. I don't think anyone wants to see buildings or property burning in their city or their town. And I don't also think we want to see armed bands of people that feel compelled to be out there to protect their town or city because the police have been told to stand down. And, you know, frankly, I think we should just let the police do their job. If someone's committing violence or, you know, looting or burning or, you know, whipping Molotov cocktails, they should be in the back of the paddy wagon. Frankly, that's just the way I believe. So yeah, that's one thing that the media is not very consistent on. They all want to say, how come a 17-year-old had an AR-15? How come a 17-year-old who crossed state lines? I mean, there's so many things that were wrong in that whole narrative. And, but yet none of them are like, how come Gage Grosskreutz, the, you know, felon, had a handgun? Like, that's a big question, right?
Yeah, he admitted under oath in a trial proceeding that he was carrying a gun he should not have been carrying. His license was expired.
Right.
What ramifications are coming for him?
Yeah, and I even like the part where he's like, he didn't just say it was expired. He just said, oh no, they're like, did you have a license? Yep, I had it on me. Yep, I had it. Was it valid? No. It's like, but I had it. Like, okay, that's, try that when you go fly to, you know, out of the country with your expired passport. See how that works for you. So basically, you're a felon in possession. And you know, maybe I'll give the guy the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he did think he was there to stop, you know, he was trying to stop an active shooter and he was holding the gun. He could have shot him. He was holding the gun pointed towards him and he reaches in for the gun and that's when he gets shot. But again, like so much of this at this point, like where two people have already been shot and now you're reaching in for a gun, like so much has gone wrong on this night that it's, you know, I don't think it's a win for anybody. It might be, you know, it's a win for Kyle that he was able to go about his life again and he's not going to be, you know, found guilty of murder. And I think the prosecution did a horrific job of that. You know, it was almost reminiscent of the trial of the century, the whole OJ trial and the, what was the girl's name there that was the prosecutor?
That was
Marsha.
Garden was the defense. Marsha. Yeah, I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up too. But it's almost as if it was, you know, her incompetent. I mean, they put these guys who are incompetent. Marsha Clark. Thank you. So, yeah. And one of my guests last week on the show, Keith Langer, is an attorney, said that basically that whole prosecution team was the Marsha Clark of our modern era here in the 21st century. So, yeah, and I would agree with that. Like, they really botched that whole prosecution. And frankly, if they wanted to hang something and hang the trophy on the wall, maybe they could have got him for some other lesser charge. But to go for murder one or murder two, it was so obvious to everybody involved that it wasn't, you know, and you don't have to be a law professor to see that. So,
and Toby, I have a question about that too, because I'm not an experienced shooter or anything. So Grosskreutz, whatever, was reaching for the gun. Is that a de-escalation technique, tactic, or is like that something that's taught, or was that like, why would he be reaching for the gun?
Well,
if you think he's an active shooter.
So that's a great question. That's a great question. If you think that guy is an active shooter and you have a gun, frankly, there's no reason to be reaching for the gun. So that makes me call foul on that argument that he thought he was a, you know, active shooter. If he was an active shooter, he was in a target rich environment, but he wasn't shooting his gun, except that people were kicking him in the head, swinging skateboards at him and pursuing him. So, you know, Gage jumped in and kind of followed him down the street as he's trying to get to the police line. And so we teach in our active shooter classes that you do look for opportunity. And he said that he thinks Kyle was trying to chamber around or manipulate the gun in some way. And that opportunity would be the time to go for a gun. Like, but I teach that in an unarmed space. You know, you're in the restaurant, in the mall, you're not this, you don't have a gun on you, or but you look for the opportunity to, when the guy is reloading or he's got a jam or he's got something and he's looking and fixated at the gun. Yeah, that's the time you rush in. But you don't reach for the barrel of the gun and play tug of war. Like, that's stupid. That's right. That's dumb. Like, that's how you get shot. But you know, so you tackle, you got to tie him up. The good news for Kyle was that he wasn't able to reach the gun, and he was able to, you know, get that shot off, which I think worked out, you know, perfectly. It shot him in the arm that his control hand was in. And fortunately for Gage, he went home and he got to testify in that trial, and unlike the other two. But, you know, it comes back to the saying, like, you play stupid games, you win stupid prizes. And I think a lot of that can be painted around in all ways. But so, you know, this all begs the question too. You see, like, is this going to be another Nicholas Sandman situation where, does he have the ability now to go sue every news agency? And the first person, candidate Joe, who said he's a white supremacist, you know, so if, is he going to just take the W and go away and make a couple Tucker appearances, or is he going to now hire the defamation lawyers and go after these news agencies for, you know, the awful light that they painted him in? And, you know, I personally wouldn't mind or think ill of him if he did, you know, but I mean, the kid has to live with this for the rest of his life for sure. And, I think that a lot of people recklessly tried to escalate this into a narrative that wasn't there, trying to make it about race. It wasn't trying to make it about the AR-15. It isn't. It's trying to make it about, you know, all of a sudden crossing state lines became really important to a lot of people. Like, but crossing a border is like, is not a big deal, apparently. Like, come on in. And yeah, we're going to ship you all over the country. It doesn't matter about state lines. But when someone travels 25, 30 minutes across a state line, all of a sudden, you know, he was there to kill people. Like, that's the narrative they're trying to paint, and it's not. So I think a lot of stuff was definitely recklessly put out there against a private citizen, very similar to Nicholas Sandman, by major media news outlets and trying to have their trial in the media, frankly. But anyway, all right, we got Charlie on the line. Charlie, you're next on the Grace Curley Show. Thanks for calling.
Toby, Larry, what's happening, man?
Hey, how are you? Is this the Charlie? Is this Charlie Cook?
This is the Charlie.
All right.
Yes, it is.
What a guy. Thanks for calling in. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just out in Worcester, and I turned to RKO, and I hear you on. I'm like, wait a second. Hold on a second.
I know that guy.
I do.
So for those of you who don't know Charlie, he has a wonderful YouTube channel, Riding Shotgun with Charlie, and does the gun grams. So if you haven't seen a gun gram, and you guys should do this one of these times as a gift for Howie, like, you get Charlie to play the trumpet with one hand and he does all the percussion with the firing of the gun. It's pretty slick. And yeah, so it'd be awesome. But I got to see you on Sunday, Charlie. What'd you think of the whole aftermath of the Gunmakers match?
I have such FOMO, such fear of missing out, and I missed it. I missed the whole thing. I'm looking forward to doing it next year.
Yeah.
Like, I got to make sure that I'm clear on this and pick up one of the P80s and then pick up all the other stuff, the slide and the barrel and the pins and everything. I think it looks like so much fun. And I saw the video that you guys put out from Saturday, and I'm like, oh, man, I should have been there.
Well, there's always next time. So we would be glad to have you on there. But what are you up to these days? What are you working on?
You know what? I actually put out a Riding Shotgun episode today with Ashley Lubinsky, who is a firearm historian, and I interviewed her at the beginning of October in Dallas, and I usually put out shows on Tuesdays, but I put her show out today because we went to Dealey Plaza, and we had our pictures taken at the X's where Kennedy was shot, and at the Grassy Knoll, and at the School Book Depository, and today's the anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. So I thought it was appropriate that we were in Dallas, and I put her show out, and that's the most recent show that I put out. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, it's not only the anniversary of the assassination of JFK, but it's also my mother's birthday, and that kind of ruined her birthday from like 1963 to like at least 1973, like they cast a dark cloud over it. So happy birthday, Mom. I'm sure I'll see you soon, but that sounds like a fascinating episode. I'll have to check it out. And if you haven't seen one of his interviews, you got to get on there. And I know that I will have made it as a gun guy one of these days when I get to ride shotgun with Charlie. Like, there's been a couple of threatening, like, we've threatened to do it a couple of times when he comes down to teach a class for us or something. Like, yeah, I got to get you in the car one of these days, Toby, and we'll do an interview with you. And like, yeah, so someday, like, I'll know I made it in life when I get that ride in the
you're doing a radio show, for God's sake. You're not doing some silly YouTube channel.
Well, you do a great job out there, and I appreciate what you do for the Second Amendment. You're at lots of classes. I've bumped into you many times over the years at classes and done training events with you and training classes, and it's always fun to see you, and good talking to you, and I appreciate the call in, brother, and we'll see you soon.
All right, take care, Joe.
Right, God bless. Yep. Charlie's a great dude, and he did come down, and he was like really sad that he had missed out, but he got some good media as a result and got to interview a few guys, so that was fun. And anyway, but all right, we'll be taking more of your calls after this, so stay tuned. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show, and I'm Toby Leary.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley is your perfect lunch date.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back to The Grace Curley Show. I'm your host today, filling in for the vacationing Grace Curley, Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks down in Hyannis. And if you want to come check us out, we'd love to have you. You can also go to capegunworks.com, click on Rapid Fire, and follow along on the only radio show that talks about all things guns, Second Amendment, freedom, and self-defense. It's a weekly show. We also podcast it. You can listen to prior episodes. We have some fun guests on every once in a while. And it's Rapid Fire because it's just a quick hour and it's over. But we are on for 2 hours now every week. So we'd love to have you join us. But been talking a lot about, some of the news of the day with the Kyle Rittenhouse and whatnot, all that going on, which is still very fresh in people's minds. And, you know, we got Al Sharpton out there now, who's talking about how vigilantes can go and kill people. And we got some cuts on that, right? Why don't we play cut number 3?
But when you look at the broad message that came out of this, is they have said now that vigilantes can go to protest and kill people and say that they were defending themselves, which puts all Americans, particularly those that want to protest for whatever issue, in danger. The precedent that it set, that you can have a judge sit there and say people can be killed, but you can't call them victims, but you can call the other side what you want.
So, you know, obviously he's very worried about protesters now because, you know, he's the one that fans the flames of protests a lot, and he's made a career out of it. But, you know, people just showing up and killing people, like just showing up and mowing them down. They can do that now. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, that's Trump's America.
Yep, that's it. And I think this goes back to the earlier caller we had who said everything kind of worked out for him because there were drones and lots of cell phone camera video and all kinds of people recording and media there. And I promise you one thing, if he was just there to kill people and just started shooting down protesters, the verdict might have been a little different. I think things would have turned out a little bit different, you know, and I get that, you know, people want to, you know, say, oh, justice wasn't done or whatever. And they feel very strongly about that. And I have family that feels very strongly about that. And, you know, I'm trying to be empathetic to that cause, but self-defense is like the most basic human right. If you don't defend your family or yourself against people who are trying to kill you, then you failed. As a human, in my opinion, like, I don't think you should, for one, you know, if it's me versus them, okay, whatever, but my kids deserve a dad at home, right? And my wife deserves a husband at home. Like, that's where the premise of self-defense is. Like, I used to think years ago before I was married and stuff, like, okay, you know what? I don't know if I would kill someone if it came down to me or them. But on the other hand, at this point in my life, you know, I got a lot to lose, or my family has a lot to lose. And that's where the whole self-defense premise came in, really solidified for me personally. Not to say that there's anything wrong with defending yourself if it comes down to me or them, but, you know, just for various beliefs I had, I felt like, hey, if I can give someone an opportunity to get their life straight, great. But that isn't the case anymore. So anyway, we will be right back after this. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. I'm Toby Leary.